With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of... Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit. Thank you so much for being with us. It's sunny, it's a beautiful day. I'm really happy today. How about you boys?
You can just hear the smile in your voice.
It is sunny, the weather's nice.
I'm grinning from ear to ear.
I'm even in a good mood because of the weather. You
know? It's so rare that, to be honest, this week has really fluctuated because I remember 2 weeks ago it was beautiful and then we had the next weekend, it was absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
But now it's back, so.
But we're good. Yeah. We're back in the studio.
We're back in the studio.
Oh, after M-Fest.
M-Fest.
So, before we get cracking on to that.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting us. I have beef with one of the persons at M-Fest.
Why?
So one of the audience members came for Ray.
No, she didn't come for Ray.
Excuse me? Yes, she did.
Ray, she did not
you
come
know
for
she
you.
Did. Do you know why I know she did? Because so basically, guys, I said that the men in, The Thousand Splendid Suns, which is the book that we were discussing, were trash. And indeed they were. If you've read the book, you'd understand. And any man who is abusive, in my eyes, is trash. Any man that, like, look at...
I mean, all of them apart from Terry, yeah.
They were... No, not, like, even there is some ingrained trashness in him.
Okay.
Anyways, but that was essentially what I said. And this white woman from the crowd, she just, you know... lifted up her neck and said this casual misandry that you're saying, Ray, is outrageous. And
she did not say Ray.
Are you really?
She was talking to all of us because she said that.
Derek, come on.
Oh my.
Are you really going to do this?
Ray, we were all saying that the men were trash. We were all like,
yes, okay, but yeah, she was looking at me. And then the only thing is, and on top of that, she said, and I was going to answer, and she said, actually, I would like to hear from the boys,
which was
horrid because I know damn well she was talking about me and to accuse me of misandry, something that I don't even believe in, to be honest.
Do you know what's so mad? After she asked the question, she put two thumbs up to me and Alex.
No, she did it to me. She was looking at me.
Why was she?
I don't even know.
She was doing it to you.
Trust me. Because I was looking at her, I was gunning her for
That's
her.
That's very cheeky, boy.
very cheeky, but just to put it to rest, I love men. Okay, I don't need to justify me calling men trash. I love men. Men are wonderful creatures. I don't like the trashness in men. I don't like the patriarchy that certain men perpetuate through violence, through aggressiveness, through ensuring that they don't stick up for our rights. And if you are complicit in that, and if you tacitly comply to that, and you don't stand up for women's rights, because we do not exist in an equal playing field. Men and women are not equal. So to come with your long throat, whoever's long throat, and to say that...
You're appropriate in my language.
I know. I really like it. Thank you, Alex. But yeah, so that's what happened at MFest. Otherwise, it was wonderful. I love the debate that we had about A Thousand Splendid Suns.
It was an amazing crowd. I mean,
beautiful people.
Everybody that came down. How are you guys' weeks?
Anyway. My week's been all right. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just been decent. I got this this new Huawei thing.
So guys, Derek calls these Huawei. Yeah.
Huawei. I've been saying
I know it's called that because a white person said that, and I always think a white person's translation
every time,
is correct.
Every time I just googled
Huawei
earlier, and I wrote Huawei, and it corrected me. I was like, hey. the P20.
Yeah, he's got a nice cute
phone. The P20 is sick. Mm. Like, it's got that facial recognition thing.
Right.
So I don't have to do much as well. Face. I can just, yeah, like, when I'm calling someone, I can just find their name and put the phone to my ear. It'll call. When they're ringing me, I just pick up, put the phone to my ear, and it answers the phone for me. Yeah, yeah, it's a sick phone still, like.
Okay, we are not sponsored by Huawei. So we're not
going to... I know, but I'm just saying,
to go like, into this much detail.
And also, if I don't want to use my phone, I can set, a timer. So it will turn my phone off at 10 o'clock and then turn it back on again at 7 in the morning.
That's it,
right?
I'm about to get it.
There's bare different features, like, you know, and you can do like split screen and stuff. And one thing that's really cool is the fact that when my fingers are wet, really? When I'm in the shower, I don't want to touch it. Yeah, but what you can do, you can use your knuckle, fam.
And you can use that on your, you can do that on your iPhone.
And do all kind of mad.
You can do that on your iPhone.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this is better than the iPhone X.
Okay. Have you had the iPhone X to test it out?
They told me in the shop.
Yeah, but come on.
It is better. Like,
anyway. Why would they?
But a lot of people, I was reading reviews.
Ray, the iPhone X costs more money. For them to tell me this is better, they're doing themselves a disservice.
Oh, God.
Trust me. So, man, it's a sick phone. The camera's absolutely lit.
All right, so thank you for that, Derek.
anyway,
thank you so much.
How was your week, Ray?
My week was okay, actually. I mean, I was a bit sick midweek. Mm. I got really like exhausted and unwell, and I just stayed.
Is that
in
when
bed.
Your lips became fat?
I had a swollen lip, yes, and I sent a picture of it to Alex because me and Alex are like comfortable.
I was like, why is she sending me this lip though? But it's fine.
But yeah, I was a bit unwell, but I'm all better now. Alhamdulillah, thank God. And yeah, it was an okay week. I read an amazing book. So let's get cracking on to what are you reading. Alex, what are you reading, darling?
This week I was judging the Young Adult Book Prize for the Hay
Festival.
Yeah.
Mashallah.
So we had the judging day on Friday, just gone. It was amazing. So I was reading most of those books for most of these past how many weeks. So,
yeah.
Which I couldn't really talk about. But those are the books I was reading. I finished Indigo Donut and I got through half of Straight Out of Crompton by Alex Wheatle,
mm-hmm.
which is a really interesting book. Touches on some really great themes. But I think like the language was a bit displaced. You know, like he was kind of talking... You know, like Kwasi Newlands, The Scholar, the kind of language in The Scholar. But if you put it into a book today, for young people today, the distance is there. The slang isn't really current.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Why does it need to be?
Because it's for young adults today.
So
you would want to relate to the
Alex
adults
Wheatle
today.
So Alex Wheatle is using
that's
slang
not,
in
not
a way
that...
That's
what writers are supposed to do.
No, I mean, I feel like, in my opinion, feel like if you're going to write a young adult book, I'm not saying that, obviously, he's a writer, he does what he wants to do. He kind of makes up his own slang or whatever. But I'm saying that there'll be a distance placed in there because a young person probably read the book and think
I'm not using this slang in this way.
I don't use this, so therefore it's not even about.
Nah, I think you're patronizing the reader a little bit.
Nah,
yeah, I'm not.
I mean, even
I'm not really.
Even when we spoke to some young people who had read it and they were like, "Yeah, it's a bit." They even said it was a bit weird having that. But I think it was a good book. It's a good book. We need to finish it. But yeah, there were some really amazing books on the shortlist. So. Looking forward to announcing the winner in a few weeks.
Yay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Derek, what are you reading?
I'm reading The Gift of Therapy by Irvin D. Yalom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's basically just, it's not, obviously the book wasn't written for me. It's written for psychotherapists. And it gives them tips on how to be better therapists, how to relate better to their clients, the things that they should do, and the fact that the relationship that they develop during therapy is the most important tool that they have, the most important thing that happens in therapy.
Mm. Why are you reading that?
It's research for something I'm doing. But it's really... Like, I love Irvin Yalom. Like, I read Love's Executioner, which is amazing. I thought that was great.
Okay.
And he's got this massive textbooks called Existential Psychotherapy. So he's an existential psychotherapist where he takes the approach that there's four givens in life that affect the way we think and react to the world and whatnot. And obviously, he puts a lot of emphasis on the death drive. Mm. The fact that our fear of death
Freudian.
And destruction is one thing that makes us relate to the world in particular ways and what makes us behave certain ways. But yeah, so that's what I'm reading. It's really interesting. Taking a lot from it. And I feel like what I'm reading is going to help me in my own interpersonal relationship. Even though I'm not a therapist,
yeah.
There's gems in there that can just help you with relating to people in general.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Irvin Yalom, like, he's a G man. I really like him. Yeah, yeah. But I recommend this book. And Love's
it's timely. It's Mental Health Awareness Month as well.
Yeah, so. Love's Executioner is sick book.
Yeah.
Ray, what are you reading?
Ray's come to do.
So this week anyway, I read...
Anyway, so today we're going to be...
Oh, sorry! So today, this week I read The Terror War by Ursa Daly Ward. And...
Ursa.
Okay, whatever. And I absolutely loved it, as in... Derek actually finally lived up to... my expectations of him. Normally he gives me books that he's really hyped and I'm always apprehensive because I don't like them. This one he did really good and I'm really proud of him.
I didn't write it.
No, but like, thank you so much recommending something that I finally like. I think it is a story that is beautifully written. She really knows how to carry a plot. She really knows how to write poignantly. The beauty of it is unreal.
Mm.
And what I love is how she's able to talk about childhood with the fog that we always remember it under. So like childhood is very foggy to me because there are only certain things that are like crystal clear. And the way that she talks about certain events, there's a fog over it, which I think is perfect in terms of going back and looking at memory and how you remember things. I loved the idea of like her sexual development. And there's this thing that she talks about, the power of fear and how she comes to understand her body, what her body does to men, what who she is does to men. And it's incredible. It literally gave me tingles because I was like, this is exactly like putting something, a feeling in words that I previously couldn't. And I think that is an absolute rare talent to be able to put a feeling and pinpoint it and really just put it in a word, in a sentence, and you're like, oh my God, yes, this is it.
Are you done?
And I like, honest to God, I really love this book. It made me cry because it didn't make me cry because there was any particular moment that was so sad. It was just like, crap, there is this vacuum and this open hole that some of us exist in because we're just so sad or we're searching for something. And there was this line that talked about like all of this searching for something, one day it will kill you.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant and I really loved it. And please come on this damn show because I need you here so we can talk. And now I'm in love with her.
Oh.
Yeah, I want to make up with her. She's amazing. Yeah, as in I'm really in love with her. She's my girlfriend in my eyes.
Oh, for God's sake. Can we move on now, please?
No, can we address Derek's problem? So he tweeted, guys, that he's really pissed off because now apparently I'm talking about the book.
We can't share the recommendations.
Right, so don't you understand? This is how books work, Derek.
I'm never giving you another... If I really love a book, I'm never going to recommend it
to
you again.
Why is that? Can I ask you a question?
What?
Why does me liking a book that you like, why does it bother you so much? It's not you in
general. I'm jealous, bro. What are you talking about? You're talking about my book, fam.
No, but it's...
That was my thing, and now you really come to talk about like, yo, look, do you know what I mean? No, I can't have you.
I don't even know what you mean because you're not even articulating yourself properly.
You have something that you hold really dear to, and then you...
But isn't it like, no.
It's like what I said the other day about taking people to my favorite places, right? When you have a space that you take someone to your favorite place, and then all of a sudden they start taking people there, like as if
have a spot that I go to that I've taken people to, right? But it's only when things go sour that I look back and I'm like,
I know you're gonna come and wax lyrical to somebody else about this book, and right? My name's not even gonna get a fucking mention.
Why is it going to get a mention?
Exactly,
though? Because I'm talking about my relationship with Ursula Daly Ward, not Derek Owusu. This isn't about you. This is about the book. You were just a door. That allowed me, that you just opened the door. You said, Raifa, go through and find this magic.
And I'm never saying go through again.
You're going to lock that door.
Never, ever am I going to do that.
All of this time, you always complain that I don't like your recommendations. And I finally do. And this is what you're coming with.
I secretly thrive when you don't like my recommendations.
Derek.
Secretly.
Derek, grow up.
You're so problematic.
Derek. 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 Derek.
I will not grow up.
Grow right. up.
Nope. Absolutely not.
Never.
Anyways, guys, so that's this week.
Right. cool. So that's what we're doing this week, right?
Yeah.
So... Derek, do you have a gem this week? You're changing it up, aren't you?
Yeah, so my gem today is just a question that I pose to myself. Because
Posing it to us?
I'm posing it to you too. Yeah. So I was really kind of like, I was thinking about religion and wanting to be a better person. Sometimes I sit down and I just think, how can I be a better person? How can I, change my... And I go into this like really deep introspective mode. And I used to always say, when I was going to church and stuff, I used to always like lament and pray to God and be really sad and say, I just want to be the best Christian I can be. I really want to be a better Christian. Like if I do something wrong, if I sin, I'm just like, I wish I could be the perfect Christian, blah, blah, blah. And then I was sitting down and reflecting on this, that I used to do that. And I thought to myself, if someone came up to me and offered me a pill and said, take this pill, you'll be the perfect Christian. You will never, ever sin again in your life. You'll be perfect. You'll go to heaven and you'll live out the rest of your life sin free. Mm-hmm. You'll never, ever sin. And I thought, would I take it? And the answer is no, I wouldn't. Which made me think to myself, I like being a sinner. I want to be a good Christian, but I want to sin as well.
I wouldn't take the pill either.
Why?
Because I feel like humanity and the way that we are, not that we thrive on our mistakes, but we make those mistakes to learn how to be better people.
But this pill would make you better. It makes the experience.
It's like saying, taking a pill to be immortal, right? Oh, you're never going to die. So at the end of the day, you spend your whole life living.
No, it's different. It's not the same.
I mean? I feel like it's similar because I'd rather learn, make my mistakes, and then become better gradually rather than have something, a one-stop kind of cure. Like, I don't know. What do you think, Ray?
Would you take the pill?
I don't know.
Derek is awful.
No,
so, will I take that pill?
Yeah.
I would want to take that pill because I would like to enter heaven.
Can you answer the question? Would you take the pill? She said, I would like to take that pill.
Can you just wait?
Not an answer to the question.
Can you just let me...
You're not slick.
Can you just let me answer this question?
You're not slick.
Like, I don't understand. Like, just let me answer the question. I would like to take the pill.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that will maybe stop me from taking the pill is I feel like this pill of yours takes away my decision-making. Because it's kind of saying you will make all of these decisions and it will be the right decisions. But I think for me anyway, the test is when you are faced with two contradicting roads and you have to take the correct road. And there is a struggle, right? There is this inside battle of you really want to sin because sin is pleasurable, mm-hmm. or whatever the road is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice. And when you pick the right road, sometimes it's like, oh man, I'm kind of suffering right now, but there's this greater good to come.
Okay, what if the pill allowed you to go through that struggling experience,
right?
that battle, but in the end you would still make the decision to do you would not be aware of this. You would always think that you're going through the moral battle,
really.
Always make
okay
the right
so
decision.
I'll take the pill.
You take the pill,
yeah, even though
so you never sin again.
Yeah,
you'll never do anything again like that. Like you never.
I don't know.
But then sinning is like, we always look at sin like, I don't know, maybe we're just looking at it in a very way. But I'm looking at like sinning could be even like backstabbing, lying, stealing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't because I don't do those things anyway.
Seven deadly sins.
Do you know what I mean? There is only one.
So you would take it.
Yeah, I think I will.
There's over 100. I think there's more than 100.
I don't think there's sins that are like numbered.
No, I'm saying, obviously, Christianity.
The
cardinal values.
The big three are like shirk, which is believing in a god that isn't God. So yeah. Like statues and stuff.
Yeah. False idols.
False idols.
Yeah.
Which is a.
Really?
So where does Beyonce fit into that for you then?
I don't.
Worship Beyonce.
Oh,
worship,
sorry.
Beyonce. Do I pray 5 times a day to Beyonce? No.
There are people that do this, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So, interesting question. As for the main topic of the show this week, guys, we're going to talk about, somebody raised a question to us on our Twitter account, and they actually asked, be interesting to know what books made you cry and why. So we decided, why not make it into an episode, and we're going to discuss some of the books that we
That made us cry.
That's how lazy we are, ladies and gentlemen. That's how lazy we are.
We're not lazy. I really liked that idea.
It's a good idea.
I thought it was really good. And I think this is great for, like, you know, listener participation and stuff.
Yeah, so we've got three books each that we're going to talk about. It's not necessarily, like, sad cry. It's, like, happy cry, just straight up.
You know, I thought you guys know my books already.
What I did was I went through books that made me cry in different ways. So I've gone through the sad cry, I've gone through the sorrowful cry, I've gone through the happy cry, I've gone through the frustrated cry,
okay.
And there was one more cry. What was it? I can't remember what it was. The joyful cry.
Yeah.
Happy, but I see happy and joy is different things. But yeah. But obviously then you said three, but yeah. So yeah. We'll get three of those.
Right.
But anyway, so I'll go first.
If you want to.
Of course.
What do you mean, of course? Anyway, the first book is the fourth book in Maya Angelou's autobiographical series.
Mm-hmm.
It's called All of God's Children Need Traveling Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the book where she's in Ghana and she's raising her son. Her son gets into an accident. And it's basically just it's about home. Basically, it's about where do we fit in. It is about identity, and this is probably why it resonates with me the most. But there's a part where they are going into a village. They get to a bridge, about to drive over the bridge, and Maya Angelou becomes terrified. Like, she has no idea why she's terrified of the bridge. She can't go over the bridge. But anyways, they get to the village. And then the people in the village who see her kind of start acting like they know her. They recognize her. Like, we recognize you. And she's looking at the women in the village, like, because Maya Angelou was quite built. She was tall, you know. She's looking at them like, these women look like me. Like, they're built and all of the women are like this. And then the women in the village, they all start crying and, you know, kind of like, you are one of us sort of thing. And then eventually, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Shit. Anyway, eventually it comes out that this was potentially the village where Maya Angelou's ancestors were taken from.
Yeah.
And brought to America. Yeah. And she's managed to find her way back there.
Yeah.
And while they're all crying tears of joy, I was sitting on a train. I was in Manchester at the time going to Victoria. And I was shedding a thug tear.
the solitary tear.
Yeah, because it was so overwhelming. It was such a nice thing to read. So that was like, I wouldn't even say that was happiness. That was pure joy. Do you know what I mean? Because even the fact that I'm even now reminiscing on it, and it's making me feel the same way it did, like, what, 4 years ago when I read it?
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's one of the books that made me cry.
Okay.
For good reason though, you know.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But it's I'll never revisit that book again.
No.
Just because I want to savor that experience, and I feel like maybe if I read it again, the feeling will be diminished, and I wouldn't want
it's
that.
It's one that I'm yet to read.
It's one of the best ones.
I've got the collection at home. I just need to sit. I mean, you know, when it comes to these things, it's time, right?
Yeah.
So, and you need to just go with that sometimes. But I think I might go and start and read that one.
Three of the best ones, I'll tell you. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, All of God's Children, and Heart of a Woman.
Okay.
Those three are the best ones.
Right. Okay. And there's five, right? Or six?
I think there's seven.
Oh, okay.
There's one. I don't know. Me, Mum, and Me. I don't know if that's part of it. Maybe it is. But right. Okay. I think there's seven.
Yeah. All right.
You know, tweet us if I'm wrong. Yeah. You guys love to do that, so.
Should I go? Do you want to go?
I'll go.
Okay.
So, adding on to this idea of different types of books and the way they made you cry differently, I've also chosen books that made me cry in happiness, not happiness, I think in exquisite, painful joy. That's one of the books I want to talk about now. And I think there's one, people always ask me, like, why do I love Persuasion by Jane Austen? Mm. And Persuasion didn't make me cry. It didn't really make me cry.
Go on. It didn't make me cry, but what?
It didn't make me cry, like, throughout the plot or whatever. It made me cry in the letter that Captain Wentworth writes to the main character, who is Anne Elliot. And I always talk about this letter, but I think...
Is this the letter you made me read in Waterstones?
Yeah.
You said, go and get the book and read this letter.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, and in the early stage of the podcast when you were like...
I was always
obsessed. That think I'm planting.
But I think the reason why I loved it was I was going through a time where I was like, I don't think anybody can like love me like that. And I don't think, like, I'm quite pessimistic, so I don't really believe that I can be loved like that in a way.
And now you're just like, I'll love me like that. I don't care.
No, not even that. It's good. Like, I feel like I'm capable of a lot of love.
Yeah.
And I love a lot. And when I read this, it was like, wow, like, a man can love like this. And can love a woman like this who isn't so beautiful, because Anne Elliot in the book is very plain and doesn't do much. She's not
privileged. They loved that word in the 1800s, didn't they?
I know.
Plain.
Plain. but yeah, and I really loved it, and I'm going to read it to you guys because I don't... Have I?
Yeah. No, well, not in ages, but go on.
I don't think I have, but I really loved it because it's like, it's a love that I would love to get that I don't know if God has in plan for me or not, but yeah.
Can you just...
I can listen no longer in silence. I must speak to you by such means as are within my reach. You pierce my soul. I am half agony, half hope. Tell me not that I am too late, that such precious feelings are gone forever. I offer myself to you again with a heart even more your own than when you almost broke it 8.5 years ago. Dare not say that man forgets sooner than woman, that his love has an earlier death. I have loved none but you. Unjust I may have been, weak and resentful I have been, but never inconstant. You alone have brought me to Bath, for you alone I think and plan. Have you not seen this? Can you fail to have understood my wishes? I had not waited even these 10 days could I have read your feelings, as I think you must have penetrated mine. I can hardly write. I am every instant hearing something which overpowers me. You sink your voice, but I can distinguish the tones of that voice when they would be lost on others. Too good, too excellent creature. You do us justice indeed. You do believe that there is true attachment and constancy among men. Believe it to be most fervent, most undeviating in Frederick Wentworth. I must go, uncertain of my fate, but I shall return hither or follow your party as soon as possible. A word, a look will be enough to decide whether I enter your father's house this evening or never.
That's actually quite beautiful.
It's a moist youth, bruv.
Yeah. But the thing is, it sounds like wedding vows.
It's beautiful.
It sounds like deaf poetry jam.
Yes, it does.
It makes me like...
No, it sounds like... It sounds tingle. Like... It sounds
but yeah,
like,
I read it and I was just...
It sounds like something...
Besides myself.
It sounds like something... No, do you know what it sounds like?
What?
You know, like in the... You know, the African-American drama.
Oh, no. You, know, you will not you ever, know, did you ever watch, do this to Jane Austen.
Did you watch Madea's Family Reunion?
No,
and
I don't...
And like, they had to do those vows at the end. You know, like...
That's deaf poetry jam.
It's not deaf... Well, okay. But like, it sounds like... It sounds like wedding vows... I appreciate the letter.
Okay. Thank you, Ray.
I appreciate the letter.
That was a lovely reading.
It was lovely.
You're the best reader of all three of us, to be fair.
Excuse me?
He is, definitely.
Wow. So-
This interruption is brought to you by Egmont Publishing, the publisher behind the New York Times best-selling YA novel, The Poet X by Elizabeth Acevedo.
The story centers around a young girl called Siamara, and she's from Harlem and discovers slam poetry as a way to understand her mother's religion and her own relationship to the world. It's the debut novel from the renowned slam poet Elizabeth Acevedo.
Yeah, so I liked it. It's a sick book, to be fair. It's kind of like written in verse, in poetry, like fused together.
Mm.
That's one thing I really liked about it. It's really rap-like.
Yeah.
So you can really tell she's got a great control of rhythm, of tone, and it flows really, really well. Like, I probably liked it.
Yeah, I loved how Siomara got to learn about her womanhood in this novel.
Siomara. So you've come to put some Spanish on it, yeah?
That's her name, Siomara. it's really interesting. And you can see the process of her becoming a woman, discovering her voice and her feelings. And understanding who she is. It's like the themes reminded me of The Hate U Give.
So if you're looking for a flavor of Harlem and Spanish Harlem in particular,
Siomara.
Growing up in Spanish Harlem.
it's a great book for you to read, and it's the kind of book that you'll enjoy even if you don't usually read YA. It's out now and is available to buy in Waterstones or online.
Go and get it.
Go get it, fam.
Now let's get back to the show.
No, Dennis is going to read now.
What was I going to say? My one. I think following up from MFest, we read Carlo Tosini's A Thousand Splendid Suns, but one of the books that made me cry, like visibly and publicly on London Transport, was The Kite Runner. Now, that book is emotive. Like, there are so many, and the thing is, it made you cry for different reasons in different places. There were ups, there were the ups and downs of like society that happened in Afghan culture. Afghan culture?
Yeah.
And there were various different elements to the story. Obviously, when you see things such as, what was his name? Was his name Saeed?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Saeed. When we saw Saeed, Saeed was one of the main emotive characters in the novel. And it was just one of those things, like you got, there were certain parts. I remember I was studying for my NCTJ at the time. And I,
what, nobody knows what that is.
The journalism diploma.
Okay.
Most people know what that is.
No, they don't. Yes, they
do. Journalists you don't do. Know journalists. What it is.
Did you know what that was, Derek?
No.
Right.
The NCTJ is the journalist diploma.
Cool, go on.
And so I was doing that, but it's like, because you know when you're constantly, you're I think you probably relate to this, though. When you're doing a qualification and you're constantly, your mind is obsessed on that, but then you're kind of trying to break away by reading something else. Following through the story, seeing what happened to Saeed and with Asif and Rahim and all these people.
How many tears did you cry?
Oh, man.
Why must he count the tears?
Mandem count the tears.
You know what?
Maybe it was just a stream, like a pool.
Like, it was even a pool. Like, there was one scene, there was one really, really, if anybody's read, I can't really, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's one scene that happens to Saeed in the book. And that kind of made me tear up on the tube. And then what happened to every character thereafter, when the main character went to America and he found love and then he came back to Afghanistan, etc. And, you know, he's lived this life of privilege and all these different things. And then he finds Saeed's son and it's just, really emotional book. That was one of the books that made me cry publicly.
The rape scene.
The rape scene. And it was all these different, even like there was an attempted suicide.
Yeah.
In the book. And I was like, wow, that wasn't, I didn't expect that to come at all. But the book didn't even take me too long to get through. But it was a really, really, really like engaging book. Mm. And it was one that just really caught me.
The Kite Runner. I did cry in that.
The Kite Runner, yeah, man. Just has, and I think like Carlo Tosini has this thing about, you know, creating beautiful landscapes and then disrupting it. And then like beating it down. And then you've got to like really, really deal with that. With that kind of torture towards the end. I would say The Kite Runner was one book that really made me cry. What have you got next?
So my next choice is actually a short story,
right?
And before I even started like reading and whatnot, I read this short story and it really made me feel so weird and sad. It was like really sad crying, like,
dude, what was it called?
It's called The Nightingale and the Rose by Oscar Wilde.
Oh.
It's a short story. And it's about this little bird. And she's, you know, looking at, I say she, I can't remember whether it was a guy or a girl. I don't think he specified. Right. But looking at this young gentleman who's really in love with this girl. And he wants to take her to this dance. And the girl's like, the guy basically, I think she tells him, or he resolves that, I'm going to bring you the most beautiful rose. Mm. And then she's like, okay, then I'll go to the dance with you. So, and the little nightingale hears this. So the boy's like, okay, he needs to get a rose from this tree, and the tree doesn't have the rose. Goes to that tree, the tree doesn't have a rose. I haven't read this in ages. Wow, I might be getting it wrong, but this is the basic gist. And then basically, eventually, the nightingale wants to find the rose for the young guy. Goes to tree, sorry, my roses are white. Goes to this tree, sorry, my roses are this. And then eventually she gets through a tree and the tree's like, I can give you the reddest rose, but it has to be colored by your own blood, your heart's blood.
Oh, good.
And so the nightingale has to basically give its life to create this red rose. Mm-hmm. So it gets a thorn, it has to press its chest onto a thorn. And then as the thorn like piercing its chest and its heart. It's like singing its final Nightingale song. It's really beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Oscar Wilde is better at short stories than he is at long fiction. His short stories are so
plays,
amazing.
Oh, he's incredible. He's literally dialogue. Dialogue is his forte. Yeah. I love him.
No, not at all.
I love him. Read
his short stories and you'll change your mind.
I'll read his short stories.
His
plays are all dialogue.
His dialogue's good, but his short stories, like The Nightingale on the Road, is amazing. Mm. You know, like The Remarkable Rocket is really good as well. You know, and I've got this Penguin Classic books of all of his short stories. They're supposed to be for children. Some of them are not for children, but. Yeah, man, The Nightingale on the Road is very, very emotional. It's strange. Like, I can't even describe the feeling that I felt at the end of it. Because at the end, the Nightingale gives his life up for the rose, gets the rose. The boy's like, oh my God, I've got this red rose. Let me go and take it to this thing. He runs over to the girl like, I've got the rose. And she's like, well, this next man got me this. And your rose is nothing compared to it.
Oh,
so he's
sweet.
Like, huh? So he dashes the rose in the sewer.
Oh no!
And obviously the Nightingale's dead. The Nightingale gave his life over to make the rose.
In the end,
the boy's like, "Oh, I'll just give my life over to metaphysics or something like that."
Of course, that's what one does.
Yeah, that's what one does. Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly. He's like, "I'm cold hearted now. Well, let me give my life over to rationality."
Right? That's how guys always do it. Some chick messes their mind when they're like 12.
Did you not see somebody tweet the other day? I think it was Raya London, and she basically is like, "It had the there's a little boy on the diving thing, and he's like." Like when men try to love again after their heart was broken, I'm like, how are you going to put that on? Flipping out. That's what it reminded me of.
But anyway, yeah. So that's my second choice, The Nightingale and the Rose by Oscar Wilde. Read it, and if you read it, I actually want you to at mostly live because it's such a short story that I would really want to like see if people feel the same way I felt about it.
Okay.
So my second choice is my favorite book, and I think I'm going to call it my favorite book now because. I've reread it
four
three
times.
Four guesses
what it is, Derek.
Oh, he knows what it
is. Oh, I already know what it is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I know.
So, Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston.
This book better be good, you know. I'm going to read it in summer.
I don't know if it will like affect you as well as it affected me. Okay. But it's about a young woman called Janie. And she is in a process of finding herself. And she gets married to this man in the beginning who beats her. And she runs away with this other man who becomes a sheriff of this new town that they're building. And she falls for men who essentially are not really good to her. But she has this like inside power, this drive to want to be better. And she isn't a woman who like... wants to settle for things. There's loads of things that happen to her as.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
As loads of things happen to women, and she... takes it, but she knows that there's always more and she wants to have more. And she has really long hair. Mm. And when she's with her second husband, her husband really likes her to have her hair up. because, you know, she's the mayor's wife, and she can't stand up to him, but she wants to because she has like this inside power that's burning up, and it's like it's frothing and it's bubbling up, and she doesn't know how to contain it, and it comes out randomly. And then when there's this powerful scene that he dies, and before stepping out into like their patio, she like looks in the mirror. He's literally dead, like on the bed. She looks in the mirror and she like lets her hair down when he's dead. And I felt like it was the most powerful scene. And then she's like living life, and then this young man comes along. His name is Tea Cake. And he's like really, really young, and people are like judging her for being with him, but she's like, you know what, I don't care, I'm just gonna live my life. And it's such like, and then they go through something, this like hurricane or whatever, people are dying, and they're so in love. Tea Cake is a little bastard because he slaps her up one time. And then you realize that men are trash, but it's fine. But then I had a real moment of Tea Cake because I was like, I really love you for what you do to this woman and that you make her feel so free. But then I don't know if I can forgive you for hitting her. So it literally, because you know how like in the world that we live in today, everything is so black and white. It's like, okay, a man hits you, he's trash. And yes, of course he's trash. But then you think about domestic violence and how when you're in that moment you really love this person, and this is what they can do to you. So you're like, you're at this crossroads where you're like, I love you, but did you just make a mistake, or is this who you like? It was crazy because it makes you question things, and it's gray, and it's a mess. And in the end, like, obviously Tea Cake dies. Please don't. Oh shit. I've just ruined the books for Alex.
You just ruined the book for me.
I've watched the film.
I literally started reading it the other day.
Oh, okay.
She's talking about coffee.
Sorry.
When she comes back to the end,
you should watch the film. The thing is, at the end, it's like, because she's lived, she wanted a life. She wanted to have heartbreak. She wanted to have things like challenges, and she wanted to live, and she wanted to love, and she wanted to be loved. And it all happened. And in the end, she's like sat on her like patio, and she's looking out into the world, and she's like, I'm just going to look out. And she's just like, I'm going to live through these holes. She's like, oh, I don't even know how to just describe it.
So that made you cry when, like, and how?
I cried at the end, not that because it was sad, because yes, of course, like it was sad, but it was joyfulness. It was like a lived life. It was fucking incredible. It was...
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelming. I literally got tingles. And can Zora Neale Hurston write but just beautifully?
I think
that... So yeah, I cried in the end. I literally was texting my friend like, I'm crying, like bawling, and I'm like, I don't even know if I'm crying because of happiness, because of sadness, or because like I need to live this life that I have, because it's the only life that I have.
I think I've like watching the film,
I will never watch that film.
Watching the film was emotive though, and it did feel like I didn't know it was a book when I watched the film.
Yeah.
I was like, well, so if the...
I can't watch that. That's the one film I will never watch because it will ruin it for me.
To me, I'm thinking if the film is emotional, then possibly the book will probably be just as, or even more.
It was just... I was very like, oh, you know, it's written in a certain dialect, so I won't get into it. People are saying it's hard. But as soon as I picked up the rhythm, it was the most beautiful thing. And I hardly reread books, but I've reread this three times.
My friend read it when I was at uni, and she said it's a must read.
I think for every black woman, this is the book that you should read. Every black woman.
Awesome.
Cool.
Alex?
So I'm kind of in two minds about this book now because of the author.
Oh goodness.
Well,
then if you're in two minds, don't choose.
No, I know you cried. You cried. So you know what? Do it. You cried. That's it. If a book that made it's in that moment, you didn't know any of this stuff, and in that moment, how did it make you feel?
Okay,
so that's the most important thing. Right,
so I mean, I do speak about this book a lot, but I haven't spoken about it in a while. But the brief one, Just Love Oscar Wilde, was really impactful for me back in 2013. 2013 when I was abroad reading it, but obviously as the title gives away, his life was brief. So when we get to a particular point in the book, having read it, having been a part of a community where you don't necessarily fit in, or when you like, whether that be your family, your friends, or whatever, actually trying to locate yourself, using the book to locate yourself in that. Trying to find your place. I think that book is really, really big on that. And that's what I found. I found myself attaching myself a lot to the character of Oscar and just the way that he interacts with his mom and the way he interacts with his sister and his friend and his and Junior and stuff. So I do think that that was a really, really, a really, really impactful scene at the end, where just before his demise. And he, just before his demise. And I really think that there was something, I don't think, it just really tugged at my, it really tugged at, like, tugged at me.
You're really out here ruining books for people.
I know, but at the same time, the book's been out for ages. So if you're going to have, you're going to go out and read it, I'm going to talk about the book.
We always spoil books on here. We always spoil books on here.
Like, the meaning, it's in the title. The title gives away. Like, it's not like you expect.
I'm not going to lie to you, until you just put emphasis on the brief, I didn't realise he would die.
I mean,
I'm not going to lie to you, fam.
Like, neither did I, actually. But it's fine. I will still read it. It is brief, right? So he's dead.
That was the bit that kind of been, but it's not necessarily...
Everyone's dying. We should put a spoiler alert thing on this episode.
That's not the most... That's important not the bit thing, that's yeah. emotive about it.
Like, yeah, what was emotive it,
it's,
about
it's
it?
It's the journey of his mom, because the story kind of flicks back and forth between... It's like a genealogical history of his family.
Right.
So his mom, when she was in high school, like what happened to her parents, and when she was in high school, what happened, and all of those things. And then what happened to his sister when his sister was in a relationship with Junior, and how that kind of didn't work out.
Right.
And then his and Oscar's... like dating history and stuff, and why his mum was so cold to them.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
For so long, because obviously the way that she grew up. So there are various parts of the book that you make you think, wow, like, how did our parents deal with certain things when they were younger? How does that affect the way that they raise us? How does that affect the way that we interact as siblings?
Yeah.
We interact as friends. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're like, it's just, Oscar's mum becomes really, really, a really, really cold character, and he can't understand why he's so cold.
Yeah,
she hates men, she hates all these, she hates everything.
Fair enough.
But she loves her children in a way that's not really like, you know, she wouldn't sit there and be like, oh, I love you guys. Mm. She'll just be like, you know, do this, do that, do this, do that. She kind of just come in and be like, I work in all this
an
time,
African mother.
You see what I mean? So I think it's just the immigrant mother, to be honest. Like, it's just really
the diasporic
mother.
Yeah.
They've got to go through so many things. But yeah, the book did make me... I got to the end and I was sitting there. You know, there's that meme of that boy sitting on his bed with the cereal next to him. And he's sitting there like, well, what next?
Mm.
Kind of thing. That's where I was after I read the book. Yeah. That's why it's one of my favourite books. And I'm probably going to read it again, but I'm just really disappointed.
I'm going to read it because I feel like I've read Derek's favourite books. I'm going to read your favourite book.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm a little bit hesitant to read it now, but...
Yeah, I think it's like, it's one of those things... But what it is, it's like, no one is... Whenever I recommend... Because I don't really recommend books like that to anybody. And when it becomes... when it comes to Juno Diaz, I know that people have particular styles that they like. I mean, right. They may not like Juno's style.
Yeah, I don't like his style.
And he's got... You know, in this book, in the first few chapters, he has footnotes about kind of like the Dominican history and all these different things, which I found really interesting, which I used for my dissertation.
Your dissertation on?
Should Haiti have got an independence so early?
Oh, I see.
And the freedom. Should they have had freedom? So that's kind of what I was doing, and that's where I felt.
Cool.
So I thought it was important. But yeah, I mean, the book.
Yeah.
The book.
Oscar Wilde, okay, cool.
Yeah.
How about you, Derek? What's your next
one? I'm going to power through this one. So, I don't know if people will relate. Actually, I doubt people will relate to this one. But what made me cry is, it's basically the Time Machine, right? By H.G. Wells.
Good God, I tried reading that. It was horrid.
No, it was so emotional for me. I don't know. I got so invested in that story, in the writing. I don't know what it was that... Because I won't lie.
What was the particular point that made you cry?
There's these things,
When he lost his wife and he had to make the time machine.
No, you're thinking of the movie.
Is that not what happened?
That didn't happen in the book.
So why did it happen in the book then?
Because it's just different.
That didn't happen. Kind of nonsense.
In the book, he created the time machine because he's a scientist and he created a time machine.
Well, that's crap then.
So basically, yeah.
Maybe it's just the book.
So basically, there's these things in the book called Eloys. I call them Eloys. They might be called E something.
Are they alloys?
Or Eloys, whatever.
Okay.
But basically, they're like humanoid things that have we've evolved into them because literally we don't do anything anymore. Like, okay. they've solved all of the world's problems. So apparently we've evolved into these really soft and they're literally snowflakes. Like,
right.
They're soft, they're so gentle, they're like cute. And they just, there's this one Eloy that follows the time traveler around. Like
their companion.
Yeah, like this, yeah, that's his companion. Yeah, exactly. And There's a bit in the book where like there's a fire in the forest. It's near the end of the book. And the fucking Eloy dies. I was devastated. And I think it's just because I just really felt like, oh, she's so cute. Oh, she really likes him. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know in Tom and Jerry, like when there's like a little cute mouse and it won't leave Tom alone. And you're just, he's like, move. And it's so cute. Yeah. And it's like, no, I want to stay
white
with
mouse.
You. Yeah. It was kind of like that. That's what the Eloy was like. Really attached to the time traveler.
Right.
So yeah, in the end there was a fire and there's these other things, I can't remember what they're called. Do you remember what they're called, Alex?
Nope.
These things, they live underground. Basically, they're the other side of evolution.
Right.
The fact that the people who had to work in the factories and really work hard to create a better life for the Eloys, this is how they evolved. And they're like these
poor people.
They're like these night creatures and they're proletariat basically.
Yeah.
So they're like chasing them and whatnot. And yeah, there's a fire and yeah, the Eloy dies. And he leaves her, the bastard.
Oh man.
And
even as an Eloy, he's
right? And then obviously he's got to get away. And then obviously he gets back to his time machine. He has the part he
men
needs.
Men are even trash in the future.
And then
he was from the present.
Yeah, he goes. he goes back to the present.
He wasn't progressive.
It's weird though, because you know what? The Time Machine was my favorite book for about 4 years. Okay. And then I reread it. And I was like, this is fucking arduous. I thought to myself, as a new reader, how did I get through this?
Yeah, because I tried reading it and I was like,
yeah, because it's so clunky. Like, it's the writing comes across very scientific, because obviously H.G. Wells was a scientist.
I think it's not a book that I would have picked up that I would intentionally pick up. If it would only be a book that if you said to me, Alex, read this book.
I think,
and you said, yeah, here's the book to read.
It's because I was obsessed with time travel.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm not going to go and search.
I know, but I think the difference is with me. One, I was obsessed with time travel. And two, when I first started reading, I didn't know what the classics were.
Oh, yes.
I had no idea.
You were just reading.
I was just reading books.
And that's a beautiful thing.
It's bizarre, though, because now that I'm here and everyone's telling me, oh, the classics is classic, I'm like, oh, my God, but I used to love these books. And I didn't realize they're classics.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, when I was like 15, and I was reading Austin, I was like, oh!
It's weird that I started with those books, that the language was so complicated. So now when I read simple language, it gives me a headache.
Yeah, that's so weird. I get that.
I just did it. Weird. I just
like,
did
when
it,
people I stay, when people come at me and they're like, I don't like Shakespeare because it's a bit, and I'm just like, but that's... Because I read Shakespeare because before reading Shakespeare for school, do you know what I mean? Like, the first time I read Shakespeare, it wasn't because of school. Like, I just picked Romeo and... No. Richard III, and I just read it.
Oh my God, really? That's such a...
That is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Just going into literature blind.
Yeah, yeah, like without curriculum, without a teacher telling you that's this is how it was meant to be
without
interpreted.
People telling you that this guy's trash or this woman's trash.
But a lot of the
books...
It's
like that blank space where you can interpret things by yourself. That's powerful.
Yeah, I was big on... I was doing the young adult and then I went into the crime and then I went into actual general fiction.
Beautiful.
And then that progression was amazing. Like even when... So now when I read crime fiction now, I'm like, oh my God, I would clearly... I had to be young to read that.
Yeah.
Because I can't read, like, I read it now and there's too much I've
but
read
it's
before.
It's that growth. It's beautiful.
It's a really
weird,
it's a really strange thing, but I can still find the beauty in it.
Yeah.
So that was The Time Machine, you said?
Yeah, The Time Machine by
H.G.
Wells. By H.G.
Wells,
amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to wind up?
Yeah, my final one is you guys have heard me talk about this a lot, obviously. Nervous Conditions by Tsitsi Dangaramga. Literally the boys, if you see them right now, they all like, Derek just picked up his phone because he's like, oh God, this again.
Why are you wanting me up?
Alex just rolled his
head
back.
We're not on video.
Alex just rolled his head back like, oh God, this bitch is at it again. But I have to mention this book because this book is the first time that I saw myself represented and not as a black woman, as in just like the outside, stuff like, oh, you're a black woman and therefore I'm going to write you in a book, right? Derek, stop taking selfies. Stop it.
Sorry.
So Tsitsi Dangarembga's book is about a young girl who gets the option of going to school because her brother dies. And, you know, there's this benefactor who is her uncle. And she's not the girl that I really connected with. Who I connected with is Nyasha, who is the uncle's daughter who grew up in Britain and had to come back to the motherland and navigate life. And it was the first time that my internal struggle of being a young first generation immigrant child was explored in a book. I saw a young woman who was navigating two paths, who was in that, occupied that space where the two tectonic plates of abroad and home come together. She was like, oh yes, there is this
beautiful imagery. Tectonic plates of abroad and home.
Yeah, she was like, she loved her culture back home, but then she also saw these other views that she got when she was in London, and she was trying to navigate them, and they were hard because she has these two very different thoughts coming together and almost opposing each other. But she could find a way of marrying the two together, but she was having trouble because other people couldn't see that. And I remember there was a part when she was reading Women in Love.
By D.H. Lawrence.
Yeah. And her father was like, don't read this stuff. You know, this is not appropriate. And I remember coming home.
That's real talk though.
So I remember coming home and I was like, I think 9 years old. Or like, no, I think I was like 10 or 11. And I came home and I had Jacqueline Wilson's Girls in Love, right? And my uncle found the book and we were in the kitchen and he gave me a massive telling off because he didn't even know what the book was about, right? But he saw love and he saw girls and he thought, oh my goodness, what is my young child reading? And he thought it was horrible. And I got a massive telling off. And honestly, till this day, I haven't read that book. And I think I should. Yeah. And it was at that moment that I was like, but I really want to read this book because this side tells me that I should read this book. But then this other side is telling me, no, this isn't appropriate for a young woman to read this book. And I'm not putting blame on any sort of culture, whatever. I'm just saying that this was a moment in the book where there were two opposing views. And it was at this critical moment that I realized that I had gone through this exact moment where I was reading a book that my African parent thought was unacceptable, that was written from a British side. And so yeah. I literally, in that moment, cried my eyes out. And it wasn't even sad. It was just, it hit home that shit, this was me.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Mm. And yeah, like and she said the condition of, Sartre said the condition of, I forgot, but the migrant or whatever is one of a nervous condition. And I'm always so nervous. Mm. And I always think that's just me, but I think it's just like the position that I'm in. And that's why I think this book is very beautiful. And it made me cry because it was me. And there's no other book has been able to represent me as much as this book, and that's why I cried so much. So yeah, Tsitsi Dangarembga, guys. She has another book that I'm really scared of reading because, you know, I hope it doesn't ruin it.
It's a sequel.
Yeah. I refuse to read it, just as how I refuse to watch The Eyes of Watching God.
Okay.
But yeah, so Nervous Conditions by Tsitsi Dangarembga. Right. That's my last book.
So guys, those are our books. If you wanted to let us know what yours are or what you guys have done when it comes to crying towards book, or which books were tearjerkers for you, let us know. Tweet us.
Absolutely.
Send us emails, message us.
Cool. So moving on to issues.
Even then. No. Mostly flicks.
What are you talking about?
I mean, okay.
We have to talk about this though.
We've got time for it. Okay.
We do have time for it. But
spoiler alert.
I'm gonna skip my raise. So I'm not gonna have a raise so that we can have this conversation.
Okay.
Fine.
All right.
Massive spoiler alert. If you have not seen Avengers Infinity War,
don't.
Firstly,
stop.
What are you doing? But yeah. Secondly, don't listen. Stop. Pause.
That's it. It's over. Mostly it's done for you.
Just pause. There's going to be a lot of spoilers.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you so much, Disney, for inviting us, first of all, to watch it.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I loved it. I love the bragging rights.
I know, right?
Avengers Infinity War. Guys.
Yes, Avengers Infinity War. Disney invited us to watch a pre-screening on Tuesday. I think, was it 2 days before it came out? Mm-hmm. And all of us guys went to Leicester Square and we went to watch it. Alex, what did you think?
So I felt sick by the end. I was just like, I was literally captivated all the way through. Mm-hmm. And it was things like, the thing is, what it did was, it balanced the humour, the thriller, the action.
Yeah, because you know I was really worried about that. Yeah,
because obviously it captured each character of each film.
Mm.
You know, film characters. So obviously you had Thor and you had the Guardians of the Galaxy, etc.
Yes.
The Guardians of the Galaxy is a lot more, it's a lot more comical.
Yeah.
Whatnot. And obviously Iron Man, he was still like
serious and witty still.
And
witty. Yeah.
And then you had Doctor Strange. So my favorite character is Doctor Strange. Like,
because he's so you.
He's just like the best. For me, he's like the best character there.
Ridiculous. But I understand.
He's not the best character.
You know, for me, I know he's not the best character.
He's like a little, he's just a wizard.
I know, but I really enjoyed him. Like, you know,
there was even that scene.
He was like,
he was really good.
What do you do?
He's
like, I'm protecting your reality. And I was like,
douchebag.
Like, you know what I mean?
But I know what
like,
he's
he dropped it really deep. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it was a brilliant film. I wouldn't give it 10 out of 10, but I would
say.
I wouldn't give it 10 out of 10. I'm reluctant to give anything the full amount.
I would give it 12 out of 10.
That's just the man thing, innit? But
excuse me?
It is a man thing.
Derek, what do you think?
Infinity War 10 out of 10.
Right?
Family 10 out of 10.
Thank you.
Look, I understand what you're saying. Doctor Strange has a good presence in that movie because he's integral to the whole Infinity War thing. You know, because obviously he's seen the way they're going to win it.
Yeah,
and
he knows.
I think the reason why he gave the stone to...
was because he knows that's the only way.
Exactly. But then also... I would say the top guy in Infinity War, without a doubt, is Thor.
Yeah,
without
Thor.
A doubt.
The way he just rocked down to
Wakanda,
Earth.
Wakanda.
He was like, yo.
When
he took on that, the might of the star,
yeah,
that was so fine.
The thing about it is, though, that you forgot about him.
Who?
I forgot about him.
You didn't see Ragnarok then?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, I didn't like Ragnarok.
Ragnarok recreated Thor in a way that made him so much more entertaining.
I meant, I get that.
Yeah, he was very...
I meant in the film.
You're right. Oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't like Thor.
In Dark
World. I didn't like 1, 2.
He was too serious.
But yeah, he was. But 3, they allowed him to be more fluid, right? And when they cut his hair, I was very annoyed, but I get it.
No, I needed. He needed a trim.
He needed a trim and he needed a revamp.
Yeah.
That is true. I agree with you.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm saying, like, before he crashed into Wakanda,
yeah,
I kind of forgot. Like, I knew that he'd...
Yeah, because obviously he got the hammer now. Yeah,
I knew he was doing all that. So that was kind of like there, but I didn't expect him to...
I didn't expect him to come true either.
No, he didn't. Yeah, I didn't either.
That's what I meant. I forgot about him.
But it was a good, great landing. Definitely.
I forgot about him.
He was needed at that time.
When he lands in Wakanda, that's the most iconic Marvel moment in history.
Oh, come on, don't be stupid. I don't agree with that.
What is more iconic than Thor when he's like, bring me Thanos, and he runs with his hammer in the air?
I don't know, man.
What is more iconic than that?
I don't think
there's
it's that
no
iconic.
There's no moment more
but
iconic.
But I think, right, so I think, so for me anyway, obviously the first like 10 minutes, a major character for me dies. Like, I love Loki.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he'll be back.
I don't think he will.
He'll
probably be back in like memory. But, I love Loki.
But also, Asgardians don't really die, technically. Mm,
yeah, but he's Asgardian.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Ooh, what my rage shit. Oh, it came with the receipts, like.
So I really love Loki. So when he died, I remember in the cinema looking at Alex and Terry like, okay, well, that means that's it.
Yeah, that's
you know in Game of Thrones and they kill your favorite character and you're like, well, I'm done. Yeah. It literally like 10 minutes in, he dies. I was like, okay, well, I'm good here. I know where this is going. We're not going to win in this film. Because in every other Marvel film, you know, like you go in thinking, oh, you know what, the heroes are going to win. So you have this level of comfort, right? I think the reason why this film was so eerie and so disgusting, and you know how we sat at the end, we just sat quiet, like, what the hell just happened? I think it's because we did not win. Yeah. And that is like, whoa, like, you're really going to do this?
Or did we? You know what I think? Can I give a little theory quickly?
Oh, this is a theory that we talked about?
No, different one.
Okay.
Basically, I think that... I saw this in a YouTube video and I thought this is probably true. They said that at the end of Infinity War, when Thanos comes and sits down and
on his little hut,
and
right?
He looks on a grateful universe. That's the end of Infinity War Part 2. I agree, only because one, he doesn't have the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Two, he doesn't have the wound in his chest anymore. It's gone.
Do you know what I mean?
And also, that's the end of the Infinity War comic book. Thanos literally sitting down, he becomes a farmer, whatever. Also, Gamora.
A farmer?
Yeah, he becomes a farmer. Gamora is not dead. I don't think
she's dead.
Gamora is inside the Soul Stone.
I agree with that.
And when he clicked his fingers, he went inside the Soul Stone and Gamora was there.
That's why they had that conversation. Yes.
And then he came back. Because remember, the sacrifice, I think when he sacrificed her, she went inside the Soul Stone. In the comic books, Adam Warlock is inside the Soul Stone, which is, I don't think he's going to be in it. Everyone thinks he will. I don't think he will. But I think Gamora is inside the Soul Stone. And I think she may do something inside the stone because Adam Warlock does something that disrupts the rest of the stones.
Yeah. But didn't you know, when he clicked his hands, the gauntlet broke or it wasn't perfect.
Yeah, I don't know why that happened.
It was messed up. And I feel like that's very imperative somehow.
But the stones still work because obviously he used the space stone to teleport at the end. So they still work. So,
but then I feel like, because I was very confused then at that point, I was like, wait, should that have happened? Anyways, I think what this film did was made us realise who our favourite heroes are.
Yeah, I was underwhelmed by Cap. His entrance was sick. Everyone started clapping in the cinema.
He was zaddy.
But after that,
he was very dead. But you know who I thought was very dead as well?
T'Challa.
Yes.
Underwhelming.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Like, I was like, come on, man. Even Shuri was better than T'Challa.
But do you know why he was underwhelming?
Because even when he disintegrated, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
Cool. Exactly.
It's because I think they underestimated
how big Black Panther was going to be. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Because they thought, he's just going to be another superhero. But he was so underwhelming in this film. I'm like, what's going on? Even Okoye was better in this film because at the end when he went, Okoye's facial expression, that's when I realized, I was like, wow, you're really an amazing actress, Denai. Because her facial expressions were one of complete like fuckery. She was literally like, shit.
That's not even her best facial expression. The best one's when she looked at the Hulk like any other black woman.
Like, I'm so done with this white mediocrity. Yeah, like, y'all make me sick.
But you know what?
But I realised my favourite hero is Iron Man. I always wondered, and then there was a point, you know that point when he nearly died? I was going to get up and leave. Because at that point, I was like, no.
But is that because he's your favourite or is that because it's Tony Stark?
No. I think he's my favourite. He actually is my favourite.
Iron Man's your favourite.
But you know why he's my favourite? Because he, not only is he witty, but he has had a growth from his first film that I watched. And I think, obviously, his first film...
He's less self-centered.
Yeah, he's not even that. Because there is a part where he is very self-centered.
Like, he had to consider...
No, he's very self-centered.
He had to consider certain things.
There is this integrity that is selfish. But I don't know. There's something about him that I absolutely adore, and he's very arrogant in a way, and I love that. I don't know, there's something about him, and I love his like small interaction with Pepper and how he was like, oh yeah, I think we should have a kid, and it was of course the Stark way of doing it, but I loved how the relationship between him and Peter Parker.
That scene.
That shit didn't move me at all.
It didn't. It moved me.
That didn't move me. I was like, why? I don't care.
No, but for me, because I loved Homecoming, right?
So did I.
I loved Homecoming. You know, and so for me, this was like, this is your toy son.
It wasn't even that for me. It was like, it was more like everybody else had, they saw themselves going, they're like, oh shit, I'm going.
It was slower. He's very slow.
But Spider-Man, he saw him going, and he actually had an emotive reaction to going.
Do you know why?
He said, I'm sorry.
They explained why.
Got me.
Because his spider sense told him something was about to happen.
Yeah.
So therefore he had more time to anticipate.
Yeah.
That's what one video said.
Yeah.
I think it's probably true.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I agree.
That's why it made it more, everybody was just going, like, when you just see everybody going, okay, that's different. But when he was sitting there like, I don't.
Yeah.
Like, and then you have to think the gravity.
Drax's thing was even more emotional.
Like the Guardians are so fucking annoying, like apart from Groot, and I quite like
Gamora's the worst thing is such a bad actress.
Who? Zoe Saldana.
She's such a bad actress.
She is quite bad, but I actually, there's an interview.
She's so
bad. There's an
bad.
Interview that she does with this like woman interviewer. I think you guys should watch it. I love that interview. But Gamora, when she was about to die and she was talking too much and she, I knew, like, you know, when you're like, you have to make a sacrifice and then she's laughing like, oh, it can't be me. I'm like, bitch, it's you. Like what are you doing?
She looks like Thanos, like, tears, yeah, Thanos, like, really?
You never loved like, anyone. And we're all here like, bitch, like, it's you. Like, don't be stupid.
But that this is the thing, everything she says feels like exposition.
Yeah,
Do you know, everything, she, even in Guardians of the Galaxy, like, she's such a bad actress, bro.
Oh, man.
Like, and I've seen the movie 5 times now. And the fifth time I was watching, I thought, let me watch the exposition to see who does it badly. And she does it badly. Thor does it amazingly. There's a bit where Thor's like, he's like, oh, Thanos has this stone because he took it when he decimated Xandar. He has the space stone when he killed half. And the way he does it, like, he's obviously explaining what's going
he's
on.
Focusing on,
but it's still,
things.
It's. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When Zoe Saldana does it, it's just like, you're just literally feeding me information now. Yeah. There's nothing else
going
on.
There's a guy who said that when Thanos looked at Quill and said, I like you.
I love that
I
bit.
I loved it, right?
I love that bit.
That bit
is sick.
It was amazing.
You know what, yeah?
It was amazing.
You know Thanos, yeah?
Nobody realised it. I was like, yo.
Fam, he really dismissed that myth that, oh, CGI
is bad. No, he was incredible.
There were so many bits, yeah? Where there's even one bit where, you know, where she's like to Quill, oh, you promised you'll kill me.
Yeah.
And he rolls his eyes.
Yeah, he rolls his eyes.
Oh, fam. Thanos, like, he had emotion. Like, yeah. He really,
he was
really did the thing,
fam. Perfect. Yeah. Thanos was incredible. I absolutely loved him. He was Zaddy with that chin. Rah, the things I could do. Anyways, so we liked it. We're looking forward
definitely.
To the next one.
I can't wait. Definitely.
Can we watch it again, please? I think we should go to the mall because I have actually only seen it twice.
I need to see it
once. I've
seen it 5 times.
It's crazy because with Black Panther, I watched it like, I think, 6 times. And I always wanted to watch this more. And I need to see it somehow between today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go and see it somehow. I don't know.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the ending when the... you know, Sam Jackson, he's about to give off the motherfucker.
Yeah, and then he goes to...
Yeah.
But then we see Captain Marvel.
Yeah, so little... Captain Marvel's coming.
So
it's going to be before. That's coming out. So Marvel have lost their October slot because normally they would come in, I think, early in the year, like Feb or whatever, when
no, Captain
Black
Marvel
Panther.
Comes out in March.
Yeah, exactly, because they've lost the November slot.
Oh, it was going to come out
yes,
this year.
Yes, it was come out earlier. But they
fuming.
Lost it. Yeah, they lost it. They lost that slot.
Wow.
And they're coming later because normally they'll come in early in the year, like Feb, when Black Panther came out, and then they'll have one in like October, November time. Right, okay. But they've lost that slot, so they're going to have it next year.
This is in March.
Yeah, and Ant-Man and Wasp is in July, is it?
Mm.
Yeah. So, and what I found so hilarious is Marvel have skipped Comic-Con this year. So they're not going because obviously if they do go, then we know who is alive and who's going to be there.
Yeah.
And I'm pissed, bruv, because I'm like, how dare you? How dare you miss Comic-Con?
Do you know what? One thing though, I'm kind of like, what the fuck is Captain Marvel going to do? Okay, they're like, she's the strongest Avenger.
I've heard that she's going to go back in like the quantum realm. Because you know how like Ant-Man, I think Ant-Man and Wasp will set up that quantum realm space travel thing really perfectly. And then maybe, because obviously, what's her face? Captain Marvel has powers to go in through that.
I don't think she does.
I think she does. She has cosmic powers. So I think she's going to go, when I told you that she's going to go back to New York.
Yeah, I think
and
she
that's
will, yeah.
why all the original heroes are still alive. So from Avengers 1 and they tackle New York, all of those are still there. You still have Hulk. You still have like Captain America. You still have Iron Man. You still have, Loki's gone. But I don't know what we're going to do with that. So I think they're going to go back there. And they've been spotted filming with Captain Marvel
I think
that they will definitely go back to New York so that the original heroes can save the second round of heroes, if you know what I mean.
I'm going to put money on it, yeah. One, Ultron's going to come back in the next
Avengers
movie.
Yeah.
Ultron's going to come back and Drax is going to kill Thanos with the sword that Quill picked up when Thanos disappeared. You know, he's like, I like him. And disappeared. And he picked up that sword.
Yeah.
Drax is going to kill Thanos with that sword.
Okay.
I really like Thanos. I really like him.
He's a good villain.
Yeah, he's a villain. And people are like, oh, Killmonger. Shut your mouth, you and your stupid villain who has
Alex,
no nuance.
Alex, my man wiped out half the universe. I mean,
come on, with a little click.
He's a villain. Let's not do this. Oh, this grey area. My man killed like how many trillions of people?
The only part that I was like, do you know when I loved him? I loved him when small, like junior Gamora, he was giving her that little sword of hers. And then the moment where she turned around to see the people getting killed and he pushed her, he did that.
That's what I mean.
That was at that moment that I was human-ish. Like, I like you.
No, the thing is,
and it wasn't that he was humanish. He
had humanity.
Yes.
The film's very good at portraying those little moments where
those little moments
see
were perfect.
He had some humanity.
And that moment when he was like, don't worry about that, don't look at that. That to me will always stand out. I was like, yes.
But then you need
I
to
like
remember
you.
How he was treating Nebula, fam.
Yeah.
That's
like, Nebula was like the ugly sister. Anyways, okay.
yes,
you guys need to watch it. And if you've listened to this and you haven't watched it, I'm so sorry, but you should have like
listened to our warning.
Yeah, otherwise you're stupid.
10 minutes ago.
So thank you so much for listening. I'm going to skip on my woman's side today because Marvel was obviously much more important. Thank you so much for listening,
guys. Make sure you message us, email, rate, review, subscribe.
Yes.
And yeah.
Thank you guys. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Get lit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.